Second matter this morning is Daniels versus State Farm. Counsel?
Good morning. Matthew Wide. May it please the court, on behalf of the appellant and plaintiff below, Lazuri Daniels, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Proceed.
We're asking that the court reverse the trial court's dismissal of the complaint for failure to state a claim. This case can be resolved on the plain language of the contract. The contract here provided that State Farm promised its insured, we don't have any rights to recover our payments under any of the coverages, but today we're talking about the collision coverage, until you've been fully compensated for your loss. So the only thing that we can really talk about to change what appears to be
I take it there's nothing in the record, at least that I was able to discern, that where the terms fully compensated or the term loss is defined in the policy.
To the extent it could be, it's defined in the policy. The only part of the policy that's part of the record is the single page that deals with the recovery rights provision, Your Honor.
Do you know, is there a definition?
There are definitions in the policy. I don't recall specifically as to loss or damages. One of the two at least is defined. I don't recall there, I don't want to represent what's not on the record, but I don't recall there being anything that would change any of the arguments I'm making here today.
They were not in the record before the trial court or not in the record sent to us?
Not in the record before the trial court. In fact, before the trial court, an actual example attaches Appendix A to State Farm's brief wasn't before the trial court. It was referred to, and the trial judge looked at it at the oral argument, but it hadn't been previously been part of the record, and it was made part of the record for this appeal.
Can I ask one other preliminary matter? Do you agree that State Farm followed the requirements of the WAC? So there's no question that they followed the WAC in terms of how they handled this, and that the claim is solely focused on whether the policy language requires more?
No, Your Honor. And the reason is because the current version of the WAC provides that it can be any recovery made by State Farm in this instance can be distributed pro rata based on applicable comparable fault. In this accident, there's no evidence of any fault on behalf of Ms. Daniels. It was a three-car accident.
But at the time they distributed 70%, that was based on an agreement or an allegation that there was 70% fault. So when that was resolved, they made a change. Isn't that correct?
That's incorrect, Your Honor. It was that the two other insurance companies argued about who was at fault. Mm-hmm. One insurance company, not State Farm and not Ms. Daniels, one insurance company said, we don't have any fault. The other insurance company said, well, we think we have 70, you have 30. So one insurer remitted 70% of the total loss to State Farm. The other insurance company didn't remit anything at the time that this was filed.
Did this case come up solely on the basis of collision damage, or was there some kind of personal injury also involved?
This is just a collision damage case. I mean, there was a personal
injury. And what was the total amount of collision damage before the
I don't have that.
Oh.
It wasn't alleged in the complaint, the actual amount of the damages. The important part was that the loss exceeded the deductible.
I understand that. It's just sort of easier for me to picture these things if I know what the numbers really are. I'm just wondering, was it $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000?
It was $3,000 or $4,000, if I recall, but again, I'm not positive, Your Honor. It's not alleged in the complaint.
All right.
And ultimately, the second party was 100% responsible, and the third party was not determined to be negligent, did not pay toward the settlement. Is that correct?
Not part of the record, but you know, later on, the other company ultimately agreed to pay 30%. So
they reimbursed the second party.
The other two companies ultimately agreed to 100% with 0% attributed to Ms. Daniels. So it becomes
a... But did GEICO pay the 100% to State Farm, and then they were reimbursed?
No. GEICO paid the 70% as alleged in the complaint, and then the other insurance company later on. And just briefly, the reason that that doesn't comply with the WAC is the WAC says less applicable fault. State Farm says that means the applicable fault of these other parties that are not related to the insurance contract. Argument is that that's just a ridiculous interpretation, that it's got to be the applicable fault of the insured. And that's why on the website the OIC says if you're partially at fault, you may not get your whole deductible back. But if you're not at fault at all, then there's no reason to charge her.
So your position is that State Farm should have known that there was no fault on behalf of your client, and so they should have just paid the entire deductible.
Well, State Farm did know.
As soon as they figured that out.
Yeah, State Farm did know. There was never an allegation that Ms. Daniels was at fault. But turning quickly back to the contract, so the contract is pretty plain. So State Farm makes some arguments based on that the fully compensated or loss. Well, the loss, it sort of is what it is. Let's say the property damage was $2,000. If State Farm comes in and pays everything but $500, the loss is still $2,000. Now, she's been compensated to the extent in this example of $1,500, but she's still out of pocket $500.
Isn't there sort of an underlying premise to the contract that if I pay a $500 deductible, the insurance company charges me a lesser premium, and so I'm accepting the idea that my compensation for my loss is whatever it is in excess of the premium? Excess of the deductible I pay?
That's actually a very good question, Your Honor, because it highlights the difference between the insurance contract and payment under collision coverage versus this totally separate matter of what happens when we get funds. Who gets those funds? And I'll continue on into my time for a moment here. The S&K Motors case, for example, that I believe the judge was on, Judge Applewhite was on that panel. In that one, there was an uninsured loss. The auto company had our car dealership had somebody stealing from it. They caught the person and said, okay, don't do that anymore. Pay us back. And the person kept going forward and kept stealing. And this happened like two times. They go back to the insurance company and they file a claim. And the insurance company says, we're responsible for when the first set. After that, we're not responsible because that's an uninsured loss. You knew that he was stealing. You know, and the car dealership is, okay, that's fine. So they had collected more money from the employee over the course of the ongoing stealing than ultimately would have been owed for the time that there was coverage. So there was an uninsured loss. I think it was like $70,000 total. They had collected $44,000 from the employee. They're still out of pocket like 30-some-odd thousand. And the insurance company is only owes that first $21,000. And this court said, yeah, but that's, yes, it's an uninsured loss, but that's a different matter. What now we're looking at is now that funds are coming in, who gets those? And this court said, no, the total loss is still the $70,000. They've recouped $40,000. They're still owed $30,000. State Farm cites Mies and Chen. This court, even in the Avril case, which, of course, I disagree with, in a footnote said, Chen and Mies don't apply to this issue here. They didn't raise the question of who gets this money. Then there's the issue of subrogation. Subrogation is different. Well, it's different from what's at issue here. Subrogation is about putting the saddle on the right horse. It has nothing to do with the relationship between the insured and the insurer, other than that's how the insurance company may get some rights to pursue its payments.
I just want to be clear. This is your total time.
I understand, Your Honor.
You can use as much as you want.
I'll reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Frank Falzetta for Respondent State Farm Automobile Insurance Company, Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. I wanted to correct a couple of things that Mr. I just mentioned during the questioning on his opening, and that is, first of all, is any part of the policy in the record? Answer, yes. The our recovery from others portion of the policy was put into the record during oral argument with Mr. I's permission. I gave it to him before the hearing. He said I could give it to the trial court, which I did. And then we did a supplemental stipulation that it would be part of the record on appeal, and it is. And it's in the court's record on appeal. And that one-page document sets forth our subrogation and reimbursement rights with respect to many coverages. I wanted to clarify that.
But it does not define loss or fully compensated.
Fully compensated is not defined either there or elsewhere in the policy. Loss is, but that part of the policy is not in the record, and it's not pertinent to what we're talking about here today.
Okay.
Second, Your Honor, Judge Applewick asked about the payment, what actually went on here. What actually went on here was that GEICO agreed preliminarily that its insured was 70% responsible, 70% at fault, and refunded 70% of our property damage payment to repair the car and the deductible, which we were obligated to insure as State Farm via the WAC, not because of the policy. When we got that 70%, GEICO said, we think Liberty's insured is responsible for the other 30%. But we paid the 70% to Ms. Daniels right away. Then we continued to pursue both GEICO and Liberty via the intercompany arbitration process. And ultimately, contrary to what Mr. Hyde said, GEICO conceded that their insured was 100% responsible. We collected the rest of both our collision payment and the deductible and gave it to Ms. Daniels. That was post-filing of the lawsuit, but those are the facts that are unavoidable. So she recovered everything, ultimately,
one that you should have done 100% out of the first recovery.
Correct.
But I think that's based predominantly on the contract language, that loss wasn't fully compensated, and therefore you should have paid her 100%.
I agree with you, Your
Honor. This policy language has been around for at least 20 years because
Mahler,
identical to Mahler.
Mahler looked at it. It's essentially the same.
Can I ask you this, then, we know we're talking about the contract language, and you just said it isn't important to have the contract's further definition of loss, Daniel's reply brief makes this argument. It says, for State Farm to prevail in its argument, a loss would have to be defined as the amount of property damage sustained by Daniels, but minus the $500. Do you agree with that?
Not at all.
And what does loss mean, then, if it doesn't mean
Well, the that? Loss means the property
doesn't
damage.
Doesn't mean the entire? I mean, in other words, she lost, if the amount of that had to be paid to repair the car was $3,000, then she lost $3,000.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I still think that the definition of loss isn't pertinent to what we're talking about here because of Mies and Chen.
Well, okay. But let's just start out with what the language says, then. I mean, it says, our right to recover our payments, that's your payments, your right to recover the $2,000 or the 70% or whatever it was that you paid,
right.
You know, that applies only after Ms. Daniels has been fully compensated for her loss.
That's right.
Now, it would seem like the plain language of that means that since you just agreed that the loss is the entire amount, including the deductible, right? I mean, you've already paid her, let's say, I mean, I don't have the actual numbers here, but you've paid her, let's say,
there was a $500 deductible.
Yeah, $2,500, but she's still $500 short. So that she's still out that. She has not been fully compensated for that loss until she gets that last $500.
That's not correct in my view.
Okay,
it
but
is correct.
Doesn't it seem like a fair reading of that language before you start talking about case law?
Well, no, I don't think so, because this is different. When you're talking about the loss being the property damage, it's different because there's a deductible. It's a first-party coverage, and there's a deductible, and that makes it different in terms of what the insurance expectations should be with respect to our traditional subrogation right to go get our property damage payments. It can't be that suddenly, because of that language, fully compensated, that you're now going to read the deductible out of the policy. You're going to say, even
But you're not. Okay, now, is good. I'm glad you're getting to that, because that I know that's a statement that's made in the Averill case, but that's not really true, is it? I mean, the deductible is not written out of the policy. If you had not gone after your subrogation, you know, if you had done nothing but just give her $2,500 when her loss was $3,000, you know, the deductible is the reason why. She contracted, and you contracted, that if she had $3,000 in damage, you're not going to give her $3,000. You're going to give her $2,500.
That's correct.
Okay, so that deductible, that part of the policy is in effect, even if we agree with Daniel's argument. So we're not writing it out of the policy.
Well, you do effectively if, number one.
Only if you seek subrogation.
That's correct. So okay. If we seek subrogation, which is our entitlement under Mahler, it's a traditional subrogation right, and
it's actually a contractual subrogation right here, too, because you've put it in your contract, our right to recover our payments.
Correct, but Mahler read the same provision and said that language conveys a traditional subrogation right, and if we were to say that suddenly because we pursue our traditional subrogation right, which we're entitled to do, and we recover our payment and then via the WAC recover part or all of the insured's deductible, but if you say that we can't do any of that until the insured recovers all of their deductible from the...
No, you can do it. You can recover from the... I believe this is the argument that Daniels is making. You can certainly exercise your subrogation right and recover whatever it is, the $2,500 that you paid. But before you keep that, you have to give her... You have to make her whole. You have to make her fully compensated for her loss.
But that's not what Daniels argues. Daniels makes a light switch analogy. Daniels says we have no right at all. It isn't even vested in us unless and until the insured is fully compensated for the entire deductible regardless of fault.
I don't know. I mean, I guess Daniels can speak to her argument, but it seems to me that that's your argument. You're saying that that's what she's arguing because then you can say that's an absurd argument. But suppose that isn't the question. Suppose that this court, you know, in considering this case, reads this policy and says, okay, first of all, you pay her everything but the deductible. Okay, that transaction is now complete, and now you have a choice. Are you going to go after your subrogation right or not? Well, the contract gives you the right to do that. She agreed to let you do that. I mean, that was one of the things you extracted in the contract.
Well,
okay, you don't have to do it, but let's say you did do it, and you did do it here. Okay, you go after that, and you get your recovery. Okay, then the question is, as Daniels was just arguing, the question becomes, if this money starts coming in, who gets it, and what is the priority? So just let's not get distracted by what you want to say Daniels argued, which might be an absurd argument. Let's just say that the actual fact of the policy is that you do have the right to go after your subrogation. But the question is, once you start recovering money, who gets it first? Does she get her $500 first? You say no.
Right.
And I don't understand how that result comes from this plain sentence here.
Because you have to read the subrogation right still in the context of the coverage involved. And the coverage involved says that the insured retains a part of the risk up to their deductible, in her case, $500. So if you're going to say we can, that the subrogation rights vested when we pay her the $2,500 less the $500 deductible, I think that was Your Honor's hypothetical.
Are you familiar with the Bordeaux case?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and the Bordeaux case is cited as for a partial part of its holding here, but it seems like the way it comes out in Bordeaux is that the trial court properly ruled that Bordeaux and Cameray were entitled to be made whole before any third-party recovery funds are paid to the insurers.
No, because Bordeaux dealt with reimbursement, and Bordeaux was not a traditional subrogation right. Bordeaux was a reimbursement case, and the court went out of its way to say so, and that's like Avril. You know, you're going to...
Counsel, Avril was different. The language in that policy, well, that policy did not have the language that's here. It was a pure subrogation issue, and, of course, you're not... Recovering the deductible is not subrogation. But in light of the WAC now requiring that any time you exercise subrogation rights, you also recover the deductible, can't that sentence now be read differently to require that the entire loss be recovered and that your client be fully compensated before you retain compensation for the subrogated interest?
But I think that's what it says, the new WAC, the amended WAC that was amended after Avril, but reduced by applicable comparable fault. It's not like we have to suddenly reimburse 100% of the deductible. No one's saying she doesn't get her money first. We did in this case. When we got the money, we paid her 70% and then her remaining 30% before we kept any money. But what I'm saying is you can't say that it means she gets all of her deductible, even if she's found to be partially comparably at fault. That truly reads the deductible out of the policy in a way that Mies and Chen don't contemplate, because Mies and Chen said that the trigger of cover and when the insured is fully compensated is when we pay our collision loss and they accept the payment. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, the light switch. The light switch analogy was simply to describe how the difference in policy language between the Farmers policy in Avril and the policy here operate. In Farmers, the policy said we get everything except in these circumstances. This policy language is the polar opposite. I mean, it's literally like a light switch.
Well, counsel is arguing apparently that your argument is that they don't even have the right to go after subrogation until they've paid you the $500. Is that your argument?
That is not my argument, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And in fact, I'll go back to Thieringer. Even in Thieringer, the court said the plaintiff who recovers this money, in that instance it was the plaintiff that got the recovery, holds everything in trust until we determine who gets it. I don't think anybody has a problem with State Farm or anybody else going out, and if they're the ones that can most economically get this recovery, make the recovery of funds from the actual tortfeasor, but then we still have to figure out who gets the money.
But your assertion is the insured gets the first $500 of any recovery under these facts.
Under this contract language,
yes. The first $500. And sorting out where the fault is happens after the fact.
It's meaningless. Yes, Your Honor. It's meaningless to the question of, again,
so that's,
I think
a combination
it's
of the WAC and
the first
contract.
$500, is it? I mean, your position is that if once the loss is determined to be $3,000, she's entitled to her $3,000.
Right. I took Judge Applewick's question as she's already been paid, in your example,
right,
$2,500 by State Farm. So she's entitled to the next $500, and then she's made whole, and she goes away. If State Farm recovered 100 cents on the dollar, they're going to be made whole. If not, they're going to be out. In my limited time, I'd go back and reference the S&K case.
So once the insurer pursues the subrogated interest, they are obligated to also pursue recovery of the deductible. And your assertion is that when there is a recovery in that action, the first use of the funds is to fully compensate the deductible.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then to reimburse their subrogated interest.
Keep whatever's left over for themselves.
And further, that's based totally on the contract language and not on the WAC.
We don't have to go any further in this instance than the contract language. Yes, Your Honor.
Any more questions you want to ask?
Thank you.